Hey, hey, hey. You know, if you're listening to that music, this is another episode of Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives, taking a look at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. And we have a special guest this morning. This is about finding your path in life and work. And I know that doesn't apply to anybody listening. In fact, he'll be giving a lecture here in the Bay Area in a few weeks. Let Love Lead, Find Your Path in Life and Work. So our guest this morning started life in, we have this in common, he was in Wisconsin, I grew up in Kansas. He grew up in Wisconsin's farmland. I lived across the street from a corn farm, actually, in Kansas. Grew up in a family that had a retail business, was a third in terms of carrying forward a family name, and expected to carry forward that family retail business. Followed an academic track to send him off to the Ivy League, where he lasted for about a minute, because what he really loved was art and a sense of a pursuit of a spirituality within himself. So he transferred out and graduated from a small liberal arts college, and then stepped into life. Spent some time in Kenya, spent some time in France, dabbled into filmmaking, and around that Saturn return, right about 30, hit a divorce, hit a brick wall with a failed project, and hit a heart problem. That's one of those little major learning moments, you know? I've heard people say the no pain, no gain about spiritual growth and spiritual perspectives. It's not necessarily required, but sometimes those are the things that get our attention. So he felt he had a spiritual and physical heart transplant as he shifted his focus into living life from a selfless place and learning to, I love this phrase, reflect the love of my Creator rather than trying to be the source of it. And so our special guest this morning, and we'll be talking about letting love lead. Everybody, I'd like you to introduce you to Chet Manchester. Chet, this is everybody.
Hey, Scott. Great to be here. Thanks for that wonderful introduction. You kind of, you know, encapsulated things pretty quickly. That's kind of my life.
So, Chet, there's one quote that you've got in here about from Mary Baker Eddy about the concept of love. Let me see where I've got it underlined here. About the concept of love as being the critical, essential part of what our life is about. So let's start off with an easy part. We're using that word love everywhere, and I know there's 1,001 definitions. I have a wide range of age brackets of friends, so I get to watch my teens and early 20-year friends as they discover love, which, of course, no generation before them has ever known like they know. But the concept of love is the underlying word that you're using here, Chet. So what are you actually talking about with that word love?
Well, you know, love, Christian Science, I think, brings out a beautiful perspective on love as the very divine principle, the source, the cause of life. It really is the essence of God. And, you know, you look at the life of Christ Jesus and you see this amazing expression of love, you know, close up, and you see that love in action. And so when we talk about love, when I talk about love and letting love lead, I'm really talking about letting your Creator, that creative principle in your life lead. It is what you're made of. I mean, it's the very the essence of our Creator is love.
I do a set of workshops with myself about it, and I've defined it this way, and just want to toss it out, because every workshop I do, I toss it out as an experiment, so I'll toss it to you as well. I talk about it as if love is the word that we've created to define a sensation, but that the sensation it defines is actually the experience we have when our energy or our aliveness is flowing in us, our connection with Source. So let me toss that to you. Does that fit with how you've worked with that word?
Yeah, you know, source, flow, expression, you know, if you think of, you know, sun, the sun is this ultimate source of life in our galaxy. And you, if you were to compare that to God as being this boundless source of love, energy, life, and we are the expression. We are the very, you know, outflow, the very expression of that love.
Mm-hmm. So you've had too. Just to give you some background about me, Chet, I have an engineering degree. I graduated with a BSEE computer science focus, which doesn't mean I know anything about computers anymore, but from Washington University, St. Louis. And I grew up, my dad was an engineer, my brother's an engineer, my grandfather was in the technical field, my dad met my mom in a math class in college. It was a very left-brain family. I was fully expected, I was raised, bred, born, raised to be an engineer with a steady engineering job and that, you know, the career and then the gold watch and whatever. You made two major breaks from the structure around you. The first one when you decided that what you were going to go do is be an artiste in Kenya and then France, but also, then you made a second break. How easy, hard, challenging, how did you reach the point where you recognized you could make those kinds of a transition and follow that inner path rather than the clearly laid out external road more taken?
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't easy in terms of family, parents, and but it was natural because I think we're born with an innate sense of really our gifts, our talents, what we're passionate about, what we love, and we have to learn to follow that. And for me, I did as you mentioned, I was third in the line of retailers in my family, and I really, from the time I was young, I wasn't interested in business. I mean, I just I was always sketching, I was always painting, I just saw life artistically. I had a camera, shot a ton of photos, and this is what I did, this is what I loved. But still, I had that, I felt that pressure to be successful, to kind of be academic, and as you mentioned, I worked very hard, got into Dartmouth College, and it was really my first semester, and thank goodness I'd taken this one particular class on education from this professor who was right out of the 60s, and he was just great. I mean, he made people laugh. He basically said, that higher education was mostly a waste of time, that what you needed to do was find out what you were passionate about in life and pursue it. Wow. And he didn't expect that his class was going to, get people to withdraw from college, but that's what happened for me. I got done with his class. I was taking three classes that first semester. They were all, challenging, rigorous. One was on world issues and particularly looking at the population explosion in the world and the pressure it was putting on the environment. And the second one was just a standard English lit class, and then this education class. And it was a combination of I think being away from home, the first time, thinking deeply about what I wanted as a result of this education class. But it was the it was this world issues course too that just made me think, we're not going to solve the big problems on this planet with the same kind of intelligence that's gotten us into the problems. We need something more. We need we need some new insights, some fresh insights. And I had actually never read Mary Baker Eddy's groundbreaking book, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. I'd known about it. I'd grown up in the Christian Science Sunday School and dabbled in it as a teenager, but I'd never really read it. And so by the end of that first semester, I had two driving desires. One was to pursue my art, and two was to pursue a deeper spiritual life. And to really, my path at that time was just getting into Mary Baker Eddy's writings to really understand what she was saying. So I spent the winter. I did withdraw formally. I did it in a way that I could come back if I wanted to. But I spent that winter. I was apprenticed to an illustrator that I'd gotten to know the summer before, and just learning from him, just refining my work as an illustrator. And I was delving into this book, Science and Health. And it was interesting because I had gotten an assignment in art school to do an alphabet book, when I first got the assignment, I thought, this is stupid. You know, the alphabet books are, you know, relatively the same. You just have, you know, A is for aardvark, B is for boy, and you're just finding creative ways to draw animals and make kids laugh. And I was kind of stuck on this assignment. But I was reading through Science and Health, and I had come to this passage in Eddie's writings where she says, and you're getting this much richer sense of life from a spiritual perspective as you read it, and she said at one place, she says that God expresses in man the infinite idea forever developing itself, broadening and rising higher and higher from a boundless basis. It's a little hint of just the expansive nature of her thought as an author, that God expresses in us this infinite idea forever developing itself. And I caught a glimpse of God as the creative source, this boundlessly creative nature of God, and that I was the paintbrush. I was the, you know, there's the author, and I'm the writing. I'm the expression. And it was, I'll never forget, it was around midnight, and I had been up, you know, reading this book and also stumbling through this art assignment, and it was just before midnight, and it happened just like this, Scott. No kidding. It all started one day when the letter named A nudged his close friend B. I think there's more to you and me. I'm tired of being just a plain old A making apples in the anthills day after day. Sometimes I feel like there's more inside, like I might even touch the sky. So this poem, wow, this expression started coming to me, and they crept out late, not making a sound, past the alphabet gate and the alphabet hound. These, you know, these letters sneak away from this structure and this rigidity of the alphabet land, which is all straight and black and gray, and they go out and they go on this amazing discovery, and they discover that they can create, you know, words and ideas and concepts, and it was this flow, this poem that just flowed through me. And I really, you know, grabbed my pen. The whole thing was done and written in 30 minutes. I began illustrating it, you know, just really having fun illustrating this poem. It won this prize at an art school that I was attending part-time, and it gave me the confidence to pursue my art. And it was a huge turning point. I mean, I really did not look back. At one point, the letters get in the middle of this dark valley, which is kind of where I was that winter. I had left the structure of academia, and I was en route for I didn't know what. You know, as they're standing in this dark valley, you know, B looks around and says, you know, we might get lost. We might never be found. You know, what do we go? Why do we go? What will we find? How will we know? Let's go back. And there was this pull, you know, back into the structure, back into what was safe, back to Dartmouth.
Right.
And A says, bumblebees, please, just listen to you, wanting to turn around so soon. Though now it's dark, don't be afraid. We'll find a way, I'm sure, said A. Her words were simple, very strong and clear, and as she spoke, chased away B's fear, and in fear's place, a color from the sky, then another, bid the darkness goodbye. And that was what was happening in my life at this point, was that the fear, the doubt, was beginning to fade as I was pursuing this innate love for the arts and this innate love for spirituality in my life. And I did not look back. I made the decision to go forward. As I mentioned, the book, you know, won an award in this art school, and it gave me the confidence to pursue this path.
All right, now I have to ask this one, Chet. Is it out in publication? Because you've made me hungry to want the whole thing.
Well, that was the next, you know, okay, so now you're talking about my 20s, because I'm thinking, you know, this is pretty cool. I'm going to just have this fabulous career in illustration. And I did. I took it to a bunch of publishers in New York and then in California, and they all said that kids wouldn't get it. It was really funny. I thought, I you know, now that with the advent of the iPad and all these fun things, it could really be a fun, very visual and interactive kind of experience. But what happened for me was that some doors were shut that, you know, weren't kind of opening for me.
Right.
And I ended up getting married right out of college to a woman who had two small children, and they'd been through some rough experiences in their lives. So I became an instant stepdad and a tutor for school, and, you know, a stay-at-home dad, And so my life shifted from this, you know, illustration career to really parenting, you know, very, very quickly. And it was during this time that, you know, moved over to Africa, wanted the kids to have just a sense of the world and needs of the world. I traveled to Africa as a college student and helped a pastor up in a drought area near the Sudan, and went back and did some work with him, and it was an amazing experience for these kids. They still, you know, remember it to this day. And then, you know, just a series of things. We ended up traveling to France, and my wife was a singer and a songwriter. It was a great environment to be in. But the marriage did not end up working out. And so, as you said, you know, sometimes you hit those rough spots in your life where you got to dig deeper. And
along comes that Saturn return, and all of a sudden,
yeah,
everything looks different.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just before Christmas. It was a sort of low point in my life, signing these divorce papers and being so sad about it. I couldn't even talk to my family about it. Went home for Christmas and, asking about my wife and, you know, how are things going, and I just couldn't even talk about it. I just all kept it all inside.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just really on my knees, and then it was definitely a time where I had to reestablish this relationship with love itself, you know, with this, my relationship with God. And, you know, because sometimes, you know, you feel like, you know, people are standing in the way, or decisions people are making are preventing you from doing what you want to do or getting what you want to get. And this sure seemed, I mean, I worked very hard at this marriage, and as my ex-wife, and just it wasn't happening. And so in these, you know, months following the divorce, there was just a lot of back to the drawing board, you know, back to this kind of where I was after leaving Dartmouth, needing to dig in deeply, you know, really get to know my relationship to love, and the fact that hadn't gone anywhere. And I actually, I called a Christian Science practitioner at the time, and who coincidentally lives out in the Palo Alto area. And, a practitioner is somebody who helps you pray through problems and really, you know, gain insights that are crucial to healing. And so I'll never forget what she said. She said, you know, your marriage, Chet, goes on uninterrupted. And I thought, what? My marriage is gone. It's not here anymore. And she said, no, your marriage, what you understand about it, what you really feel deeply about it inside, you know, that's between you and love itself. That's between you and God. And what you've grasped about marriage, what you've grasped about this relationship with love itself, belongs to you. Nobody can take that away. You know, your ex-wife may have been an expression of love in your life, but she was not the source of it. You know, God is the source of that love that you're seeking in your life, and that's going right on, and it's between you and your Creator. And I really, it snapped me out of a pretty deep depression during this period. And it was on Valentine's Day, Scout, literally. It was on Valentine's Day in Los Angeles that I met the woman who would become my wife. We've been married now for 21 years. It was on Valentine's Day in a Christian Science church where I walked in and met this woman who I had known 10 years earlier in college. We'd met in an acting class, and, you know, we looked at each other, and it was like we'd, you know, it was like this was destiny. We knew from the moment I sat down in that church service that we were kind of getting God's Valentine. This was a Valentine from love itself, and friendship, you know, resumed and spent all night catching up of, you know, what we'd been doing the last decade. And these things in life, they do have us, really reestablish our relationship to love, to God. And once we do that, then we can flow out with our lives and our talents. And so that's kind of the next chapter of my life.
Fabulous. Chet, you shot right through something that I want to back up to.
Sure.
Because, and for folks listening, I'll let you know that a lot of what Chet's talking about today, when you see Christian Science reading rooms around and you've never known what they were, this is a resource for this kind of thinking. So those of you seekers listening who've wondered, okay, where's this information gathered together? A Christian Science reading room is a resource. But Chet, you referred to a Christian Science practitioner as someone who helps you pray through problems and gain the insights that lead to healing. Now, there's a couple important words there. But first off, let me dive in because we're talking about two key words here, love and prayer. So what's your own perspective? What do you mean by that word prayer?
Well, it has everything to do with love. I mean, it has absolutely everything to do with love, Scott. When I pray, and I work as a Christian Science practitioner now, so I'm praying with people each day on lots of different issues, you know, the very first step in prayer is a deep quietness, a listening, and an acknowledgement of how totally we are loved by our Creator, that love is all-embracing, all-encompassing, that love is the very law that's governing our lives. And that love is all powerful. Nothing else can stand up to that love. So it begins with just an awareness of the nature of God as love, and the fact that we are one with that love. That love, we can't ever be separated from it. The Bible, reiterates that. After Jesus' life and work, it was so clear to the early Christian movement that something profound had happened, that they had glimpsed this expression of love as never before. And I like to think, before Jesus showed up, the concept of God was this sort of a loving and hating, creating and destroying sort of man-like figure.
Yeah.
After his life and work, there was this sense of God as infinite, unconditional love. And, the story of the prodigal son, which is pretty universal, is just emblematic of that kind of love, that the son asks for everything from his father, goes off, blows it, and partying and wild living, and then comes back, eventually returns to himself, comes back because he's so hungry in this far-off place. And what does he get? He gets more. He gets just received with the greatest compassion and love and a ring in his hand and shoes on his feet. That story represents the very heart of Jesus' teachings. And so being clear about love is really the first step in prayer and understanding, and that does so much healing, because it heals our fear, it heals our sense of alienation from God. But then there's another step, and this next step is that love isn't just meant for you. You've got to acknowledge in your prayers, in your listening, that this love is universal. And there's a fabulous statement from Mary Baker Eddy's writings where she says that true love is not asking God for love, but learning to love and to include all mankind in one affection.
So there's a reason that when I talk about this, I'll toss out the definition that love is our own experience of our energy, our aliveness, that inner spiritual self source flowing. So we're talking a lot about love, and I know I'm kind of interrupting your flow a little bit here, but
okay.
I really want to rework that definition, because it's not about, oh, I've been a good boy, mommy loves me, oh, I've been a bad boy, mommy doesn't love me. It's not about just that being nice or not being nice, or being heart available or not heart available. You're talking about love at a much deeper level of an energetic flow, or if, for lack of a better phrase, that can physically transform, mentally transform, transform a world, or even a physical disability.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this love has brought healing to every aspect of my life. Millions of other people's lives too. Getting clear about love as divine principle, that's a word that Eddy uses in her writings to describe this, what you're calling this source, divine principle, the very cause, the very source of life itself is divine love. And it's constant. So when you think of something, a law, let's say, of gravity, that you drop something anywhere on the planet, that's going to fall to the earth, we just know that gravity can be counted on here on Earth.
Yeah, whether I want to believe in it or not.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a law. It's impartial. That is love. Love is absolutely this constant law, and it's everywhere present. And it's the very nature of our Creator to love. And in fact, Jesus said some things about this nature of love that surprised people of the time, who felt like they were the chosen ones. They were the exclusive recipients of this kind of special treatment. And he said, God sends his Son on the good and the evil, and he sends his rain on the just and the unjust. And then he says at the end of that, I want you to love the same way. He says, be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect, which really separated him from so many of the other teachers of the time, that he could see that we are actually the likeness. Be like your Father. Express that kind of love in your lives. When you do that, when you express that kind of love, this is what healing is. It's discovering your wholeness, your expression as the nature of love. And I can tell you, Tom, in my life, Scout, this is sort of the next chapter where this insight saved my life. It was as you mentioned earlier, I was down in Los Angeles. I was trying to make my way as a filmmaker. Had written this screenplay called Hamidou's Dream, about this young guy growing up in a village, an idyllic village in West Africa, and gets drawn into the city like so many African kids do these days. The allure of material prosperity, and he actually finds it. He finds the prosperity, but he loses himself in the process. And the film basically starts with him at the foot of a storyteller in this beautiful village, surrounded by family and community. Later, he's in the city, and he returns to the village to find it plowed under by this corporate farming that's been introduced, as it has to so many parts of Africa, that literally destroys the land, destroys the sense of community. And the film is really about Hamidou's desire to replant the sacred wood, to rediscover the roots of that village. And it's actually based on some work a friend of mine done there. And it was a very meaningful story, and I poured my heart and soul into this film for a year and a half. It got picked up, the screenplay got picked up by Idrissa Wadriago, who's a well-known West African filmmaker. It was going into pre-production in France. Everything was sailing along. I had poured not only heart and soul into the film project, but also, all my money. Got over to Paris, and we were in pre-production, and within weeks, the whole thing blew up. I mean, the whole project fell apart. There were arguments between the director and the producer and the producer and the funders, and I was learning the hard way that this is what happens with film. It's a pretty unpredictable industry.
Fabulous. Son, you've got a perfect idea. It's a perfect screenplay. We'd just like to make a couple changes to change the whole thing entirely.
That's right. Well, in this case, the funding just evaporated. And there I was, having devoted so much time and energy to this project. And I got sick, and I began to experience some problems with my heart. And as I, just got very quiet about this and contemplated my next steps, I had learned throughout my life as a Christian Scientist that the mental factors are the most important ones to address first and foremost. That what seems to be going on in our bodies, in our lives, is the reflection of thought. There are deep mental factors that need to be addressed. And in this case,
Chet, back up. Yeah. Say that again. Mm-hmm. What seems to be going on in our bodies?
Yeah. What seems to be going on physically is a manifestation of thought. And, many doctors are perceptive about this. There's so much with the mind-body, movement and the studies of placebos and everything else. We're realizing that we've got to care for our, the whole individual, that we're not just these machines that operate, and that you can plug in certain drugs or certain procedures and everything as well, that we are spiritual beings.
Yes.
And we've got to get right. We've got to get right mentally and spiritually to really manifest health and wholeness. And I realized that what I was dealing with was not a heart problem, but a discouragement problem. And that word discouragement is something, you know, people face all the time. And it literally means to be disheartened.
Yes.
That you are disheartened about your life. And I was deeply disheartened, and my body was, you know, reflecting that. So I was in this really humble prayer, because when you're brought to your knees like this, you have to pray humbly. And I just said, okay, all right, Father, you know, you show me what I need to know. And I was praying. I flipped open one of Mary Baker Eddy's smaller books. It's called the First Church of Christ Scientist and Miscellany, a collection of her writings about the church that was eventually established in Boston, that is still there, the headquarters of the Christian Science Church. And it's kind of letters that she wrote to people over those years. And I came upon this little gem. I literally just left the book open right to this passage. And it said, "The heart that beats mostly for self is seldom alight with love."
Ooh, say that one again.
The heart that beats mostly for self is seldom alight with love.
And we're back to that love being a universal nature, a universal key, an equal law to gravity, and being the energy flowing in us.
Yes. And I just said, well, you know, the film I thought was pretty, it had a pretty great message. But when I really examined my thought, I could see a heart that was beating a lot for myself, for my own ambitions, for my own goals, for my own desires. And I realized that, hey, wait a minute, you know, where have these talents and these gifts and these desires come from? They've come from my Creator. He put them in my heart. You know, they're a reflection of love itself. So I've got to be able to trust my Creator with where these talents should be, where they can bless the most, where I need to be giving the most. And I really just said, okay, all right, love, you've given me these talents and these desires ever since college and before, this love for art, this love for spirituality. You show me what you want to do with these talents. Because I thought I was on a pretty good track there, you know. And I got just really quiet, and I said, I'm just gonna give my life and talents to God, and I did. I felt what I can only describe as a heart transplant, a really deep change in my thought, in my character, of really a willingness to unself my life as I never had, and I needed that kind of deep change of thought, because it was what I was dealing with was pretty serious. And what I did feel was I felt this renewal. I felt this whole sense of renewal and hope and possibility about my life. It wasn't that I was losing what I loved. I mean, it wasn't losing my love for the arts and my love for spirituality, but that I was trusting my Creator to guide my talents in the direction where I could be most useful. And I had an absolutely wacky idea that occurred to me. And the wacky idea was, you should see if there's anything that you can do for the Christian Science Church in Boston. And the reason I say this is wacky, because I'd always perceived it as this kind of bureaucratic, institutional place far off and, you know, in the kind of staid old Boston. And I was pretty comfortable in California. I really did like the environment, the people, the climate. And so when this occurred to me, I thought, no, I can't. Let me just listen again, you know. And the thought.
Excuse me, God, I think you got that wrong.
Yeah.
Could you clarify that?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And you know, interestingly, when I went up there, I decided, okay, I'll go up and have a visit with them, see if there's anything that I could help with. At the time, the Christian Science Monitor, which, you know, listeners, you, and I'm sure you're aware, is an international, you know, newspaper, and it's been it's won 7 Pulitzer Prizes over the last century, and its history is fascinating, because the very news organization in New York City, the, you know, Joseph Pulitzer's news organization, which attacked Eddy at the end of her life, I mean, vicious, just, you know, so much slander. She ended up founding a newspaper a year after this serious attack, and she called it the Christian Science Monitor, and she gave it the mission to injure no man, but to bless all mankind.
And as a side note, it's one of the few newspapers that still has its own reporters rather than just drawing off of a single feed.
We've had the privilege
of interviewing one of the editors from the Monitor.
That's right. I listened to part of that interview in your archives there. It's a powerful news organization. They've actually made a very progressive switch in recent years to being web first. So it's the csmonitor.com is this really wonderful source of news. It's not a religious paper, but it's informed by deeply spiritual values, and they're out there reporting on the news, looking for solutions, also reporting what needs to be healed in any aspect of society. But you know, if there's an airline crash, they're not going to go and just frighten you with safety records. They're going to try and figure out, okay, how can this be prevented? And so the news organization is very, very progressive. And anyway, I figured, okay, maybe there's a place for me within that news organization. I mean, I love producing. At this time, I produced some smaller films and was at work in video, and I thought, okay, you know, maybe I get a place there. Well, no, actually, it was a really, really humble position that was open at the time, and it was in an area of correspondence that, answering letters from people who were writing in looking for healing in their lives and writing into the church asking for, they might have heard the shortwave broadcast, or they were looking for some spiritual uplift. And This is absolutely true. You're gonna fall off your chair there if you're sitting on one. But I mentioned the name of my screenplay, Hamidou's Dream, that kind of fell apart. That film fell apart. Well, I'm sitting there reading through my first batch of letters on my first day at work.
So you took the lead. You took this humble gig. You split California. Went to Boston, and there you are reading a letter.
And I went to Boston in the middle of winter. I just want to point out, this was all of our plants from California died on the way. They froze and they turned brown, and we get to Boston in the middle of winter, and wondering what we've done. But I'm sitting there opening these letters, and one of the first letters that I open, I'm reading it down, very sweet guys writing from Africa about, kind of problems that he's facing, and I get to the bottom, and it's signed Hamidou.
Yeah, there you go.
I love it
when God sends a little telegram like that. Knock, knock. By the way, yes, you're on track.
Exactly. I just knew that God wasn't going to forget what I loved. You know, here I was in this humble position. I was writing letters, and it was such a change of pace from Los Angeles and the film industry. But I poured my heart into this letter. Just writing to this guy and sharing things that I learned in my life and that he could learn in his, and just really sharing a lot of love with this guy, and this heart problem was healed so naturally over the course of this change that was taking place in my life. I mean, as my life and my work and my talents truly unselfed, and I let love take the lead. I just found door after door opening. I didn't stay in this humble post. I did have talents. I was a very creative, person. I had ideas. I had a background in producing and art direction. And all these talents needed to be used. I ended up, working on a series of exhibits, one of which was in partnership with the National Women's Rights Historical Park in New York, an exhibit on Eddie, the first that had ever been done about this woman's life. She was kind of a forgotten figure from history. And that work led me into helping to really direct the exhibits at the Mary Baker Eddy Library in Boston, which opened in 2002. And they were really groundbreaking exhibits about the power of thought, the power of ideas, and how Eddie had really reawakened humanity 100 years ago to the possibility of spiritual healing. So, everything I've done, from that time to this has been this outflow of love, combining the talents that the things I love most. I love children, I love the arts, I love, these deeply spiritual ways of looking at life, and they've all come together. So, and I've helped a lot of people in my practice, mm-hmm. just kind of walk through these steps of first understanding their relationship to love itself. God is love, and second, asking love, what would you have me do with the talents you've given me? And those are the kind of two basic steps to finding your path.
That is such a great phrase. So, Chet, you've mentioned a couple times Mary Baker Eddy, and you mentioned that the centennial of her passing was just last year. She passed in 1910.
Yeah.
She brought out a book, Science and Health with Keys to the Scripture. My brain started to say Science and Mind. Nope, not it. Science and Health with Keys to the Scripture. But this is back in the late 1800s, and people have to catch this. One, women weren't doing this sort of thing. Two, this was back in the 1800s, and by the time she passed, even after a huge campaign to try and discredit her by some people that freaked out, she was recognized as one of the most influential women on the planet at the time. But I like to refer to Science and Health. There's a real reason she used the word science, and this is back when science meant science, which meant it was researched and it was a reproducible result, as opposed to just it's somebody did a little bit of work in a lab and they're calling it a new laundry detergent and therefore that's science.
Right.
So she found a series of spiritual principles that she brought forward pretty courageously of actual physical transformation. And you're actually talking about a physical healing and a transformation through an application of following your path of recognizing that love, my life, my essence, my spiritual essence. What is it? How is it that you would have me express myself in the world?
Mm-hmm.
Mary Baker Eddy, just a moment. There's a phrase here of her view of Jesus as a scientist who plunged beneath the material surface of things and found the spiritual cause.
Right. Yeah, it's an amazing statement. She really did look at the fresh perspective she had on this man that many just saw as a miracle worker. You know, son of God, he can do whatever he wants, you know, and you know, waves be still and I can feed 5,000, you know, without thinking about it. You know, she saw in his life really a sense of scientific thought, that this man, and science in terms of its deepest origin, its deepest roots, as being, you know, the very laws of the universe, the very laws of good, that he understood those laws. He understood them so well that he could put them into practice in healing every challenge that he was faced with. So when she looked at his work and his life and his thinking, she was looking for the underlying principle, the underlying divine principle, and
how's this really work? It's a good engineering approach.
Yeah, exactly. How's this really work? And she actually had to. I mean, it was not theoretical for her, Scott, because she had over years, over decades, really. She lived a life of, you know, great personal loss, of struggle, and illness, and she had tried every remedy of her time. I mean, the exhibits in Boston walk you through hydropathy, you know, water cure of the 19th century, and they walk you through allopathic medicine and the drugging systems, and homeopathy was this bright light for her, and homeopathy is, you know, being practiced more and more today, because it really does take into account the mental factors, mental and emotional factors of the patient. And she found this to be a breath of fresh air for her on her search for healing, because she was being taught, you know, she's not just physical. There's more going on here with her health, and she could begin to look at the mental factors. And she was actually treating a woman of edema. She had, you know, bloated, you know, to big size, and this woman was in a great deal of pain, and Eddy came over and was applying what she'd been learning in homeopathy through various attenuations of drugs, and then she feared that there would be an aggravation of symptoms if she continued prolonged use of certain drugs, and so she began to give this woman unmedicated pellets. And, you know, placebos, we call them today, and she continued to improve, and she actually was completely restored to health through Eddie's, you know, wonderful love and ministry. She was a natural healer, but really believing that these pellets had power. And through that experience, Eddie saw that the mental factor, that, you know, the patient's belief was the most important factor in healing.
Yes.
But that wasn't where she left it, because a lot of, you know, a lot of mind body today will basically just be about reorienting your thought.
Yep.
You know, just basically. But
yep.
she
that doesn't
she
do
be,
it.
Yeah, yeah. She got to this point in her own life. She had a real setback. She was she'd actually studied with a mental healer for a time in Maine, who later critics would say was kind of the founder of these ideas. But this guy's name was Quimby, and Quimby was an illiterate man who did have some natural healing abilities and talents, but it was very much rooted in this mind body. And whenever she was out of his presence, she'd find temporary healing, and when she was out of his presence, she would relapse. And so when he died, when Quimby died, and then Etty faced this, really one of the toughest situations in her life. She had a severe accident, falling across a granite curbstone in the middle of a cold February day in New England, and was knocked unconscious, and was already at a low point. Her husband had pretty much abandoned her. She was, very poor, and now this. And it would have been such an easy time for her to check out.
Yep.
But instead, she just asked everybody to kind of go out of her room. It was a little oppressive. People just, the fear, the panic, the sadness. And her own minister, came to her on the way to church and said, look, you need to prepare yourself for the worst. I think you're dying. And everybody left the room, and she just got quiet. And she opened up her Bible, which, she was a great student of the Bible throughout her life. And she opened up to an account of Jesus' healing work. And she got this glimpse of what we've been talking about, this healing power, this law of God that was present and timeless and always applicable. And she caught a sense of just what she would call Christ, this divine truth, always present and always available. And this just lifted her right up. I mean, she sat up in bed, she began to feel warmth in her legs, the way she described it, just a return to normalcy. And she walked into the next room, the thing is that she couldn't have just said, "Oh, that was a miraculous healing. I've just been but instead,
yeah, wow, cool, that worked. Thanks.
Yeah, exactly. Gone about her life, got into the stream of life. But instead, she devoted the next years of her life to understanding what had happened. She just felt that she was really on to something, both with that experience with homeopathy. But now this, it wasn't the human mind. This is what she was glimpsing here, that there was this higher source of intelligence, which she would call divine mind, the mind of Christ, that really was responsible for healing. And it was really a yielding of the human mind's fears and limitations, and to really understanding that power of divine mind to heal. And she spent the next years of her life really trying to figure out what that was, how it worked. She found what she saw as the kind of the Bible's spiritual language, that it, there's actually a science to the scriptures. You can see these principles at work from Genesis right through the whole book, and so that's kind of what her exploration led her, was into understanding that science beneath Christian healing, that science in the Bible, and it became known as Christian Science.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's an interesting part. I mean, when you get over into the science at end of things, I'm watching as quantum physics is making it all the way around the loop back to the same places that what I've studied is metaphysics, including recognizing that everything is energy. But within quantum physics, when they're seeking a unified field theory, in other words, the physics of why does everything work, they've found that they can't get anywhere close in anything less than 11 dimensions, not 4, but 11. And it's fun to watch as they theorize that maybe these other dimensions, there's quantum physicists that theorize that one of those 11 is gravity, that it's a dimension as opposed to just a thing that we don't know what it is. And then they'll theorize that even this experience that we have that's so universal that we label under the word love could be one of those other additional dimensions as well. So there's a real place in here that I want to bring back into focus, because we're talking mind and matter. And it's not just a change of mind. It's literally, in Mary Baker Eddy's teachings and so many other teachings one may study, it's a tapping into a deeper resource beyond just what we sense with the first five senses.
Mm-hmm. That's right. There's a little word that's used very, very frequently in the Gospels in relationship to Jesus' healing work, and it's the word immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody with a withered arm, you know, immediately stretched it forth, or you know, somebody who was blind immediately restored to sight. And you know, again, if you look at that as miraculous, then okay, it's miraculous and it happened immediately.
Yeah.
But if you look at it as a coming to light of what was already there, that wholeness, that perfection, that, you know, that love itself is revealing the wholeness of the individual. And there's a great sense in Jesus' life and work and his ministry of light, illumination, understanding. And this is how, you know, Christian Science Healing approaches it too. We're not trying to fix you, make you better. We're really cherishing your wholeness and letting that light, that inspiration of Christ, of truth, you know, reveal who you are and the wholeness that's there. And what happens is that the human mind's very limited perception of things just gives way. It you know, in the light of this understanding, it's like ignorance being replaced with understanding. And that can happen immediately. It doesn't require time because the wholeness is an eternal fact. It's never changed. Each listener, your wholeness in relationship to God, your perfection, is an established fact. And so it's the coming to light of that fact that healing is really all about.
Mm-hmm. There's a place where I like to point out to people that if you've ever had a series of really bad days where things just all went sideways, or if you've ever had a series of really good days where things just all fell in place, if you sat down and tried to do the statistics of the random chance of that being a random universe in a fixed physical reality, the odds of that are staggering. Even, you know, because it's really funny, people almost will accept a couple of really bad or three really bad or a streak of things when everything goes sideways. They almost accept that as, well, without taking a look at, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
In a fixed physical universe, the statistical chances of having three really bad days or having had a really bad day already, and that's the day when this other thing shows up in the mail that was mailed 3 days before that, but the timing hits, the statistics alone on that say, wait a minute, this cannot be a fixed, solid physical universe. So I loved your phrase of that was a coming to light of what was already there, and I know I've just misphrased it.
Yeah, no, that's really what it is about, Scott. It is, and you know, the practice of Christian Science over the last century has been so consistent. I mean, the Church publishes a monthly magazine, the Christian Science Journal, and then a weekly, the Christian Science Sentinel, and there have been, I think it's now 70,000 or 80,000 published accounts of healing experiences. Really significant healing experiences that people have had through the application of these ideas. And so it's not random, it's not chancy, it's very consistent. You know, not to say that we're not always striving to improve and do better, and but there's we should expect consistency. You know, the Bible, you know, speaks about every prayer, you know, being answered. And sometimes if our prayers are, if we don't feel like they're being answered, you know, we need to look a little deeper and challenge what you just spoke about, the five senses. That, you know, they're never really reporting the whole picture. There's a great quote. There's a fabulous book by this scientific writer, Daniel Boorstin, who wrote a book called The Discoverers. And he said that the greatest hindrance to progress for the world is not the lack of knowledge, but the illusions of knowledge.
Ah, fabulous. And there's Zen quotes that go along the same thing, of the highest state of realization is recognizing you don't know.
I mean, you can, the illusions of knowledge, I mean, you can just think, okay, the sun is coming up each day and going around the earth. I mean, that held humanity for, you know, forever. That it took science, it took a deeper understanding to help us understand that wasn't what was really happening. It was an illusion of knowledge. You know, Columbus's voyages, you know, why hadn't people launched out and done, you know, what he did, gone further? Because the science had told them that the land could not be reached by ship. It was too far. They'd made a map, a mental map, and, you know, and Columbus had a different sense of how far that distance was from the shores of Spain and Portugal to, you know, know, what they believed were the Indies. But, yes. challenge what, you know, what seems to be there, whatever that knowledge seems to be in your life that's limiting, mm-hmm. That's the key to breakthroughs.
And it is, I do some work as a medical intuitive, and you're talking about something that happened recently. I just got some feedback where a young man had been having trouble with his feet, and they were consistently in pain. And his mom brought him to me, and I looked, and I said, there's a broken bone, and that's the problem, is they need to, you know, get the bone set. And she went to his doctor, who took x-rays, who had taken x-rays, and said, there's no broken bone. And she went and had the courage to insist. She said, there is a broken bone. Find it. And they took different x-rays, only to discover that he had extra bones in his feet that grew sideways to the normal. And so where they broke was right in alignment with where the normal bones were separated, so they'd not seen the problem until she said, wait a minute, stop believing in what you know is true and go look for what's actually true. And as it turned out, they had to set the bones and later did a surgery to remove them because they were causing problems. But a real place where what we know is true gets in the way of actually researching, as you described with Mary Baker Eddy, of, wait a minute, I could have just said, wow, that was groovy, I got well. Instead, right. It's like, whoa, wait, why did that happen? How did that happen? And what are the keys underneath it? So, Chet, you're going to be doing a lecture Sunday, November 13th. It's an afternoon lecture, 4 p.m. It'll be in Palo Alto at the Cubberley Community Center. Today's program and that lecture, today's program is co-sponsored with the First Church Christian Science Palo Alto and the First Church Christian Science Larkspur. First Church Christian Science Palo Alto is sponsoring the lecture. I want to give people a phone number because I know that November 13th seems like forever away, but with the speed of time these days, November 13th will be about three breaths. So make a note of this one, y'all. It's phone number 650-493-7870, 650-493-7870, or the Palo Alto Christian Science Reading Room will also have that information. Good morning, Kate. I know you guys are there listening to us. I want to mention that real quickly. Christian Science is not a structure that's set up of you either buy in and belong to our membership or you're headed straight to hell. It's actually, as I've experienced it, and I'm not grown up Christian Science, which makes it easier for me to catch the buzzwords. As I've experienced it, it's an invitation to explore your thought, and it's a resource center of an amazing amount of information about spiritual understanding and that plunging beneath the material surface and finding the spiritual cause. So, Chet, you'll be talking about Let Love Lead, Find Your Path in Life and Work. And I know this is not as simplistic as do what you love and the money will follow. I would say my phrase would be live your love and the life path would follow. Would that fit for you?
Beautiful. Yeah, love that, Scott. That's a great summary of everything we've been talking about.
Fabulous. Thanks so much, Chet. This has been an absolute blast. The time went way too fast, so I hope we get a chance to talk again. And for everybody listening, this has been Spiritual Perspectives, looking at real life from a spiritual perspective. This is Scout Bartlett. I've been your host. You can find my website, lifeinsights.net. But most of all, it's a perfect day for you to go out and have a great day on purpose.